Hello, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And this is A Link to the Cast, episode 20. We're recording this in November 2010, and we've got a big old show for you. We've got a special review of GoldenEye 007 that's out on Wii. We've got Dead Rising 2. We're talking Castlevania as well. We're also talking about Formula One 2010 on this, the end of the current Formula One season. And we're also going to be talking about a pinball game on Xbox Arcade, which if you listen to episode 19, you will know that Brian Shelf is a big fan of. We have got Rick back with the team.
Indeed, good generic insert time here.
Yes.
To you too.
Exactly. Brian is away this time round, but he is going to be doing a review for us. So you will hear Brian Shelf doing his review of this flaming pinball game he keeps banging on about. We're also going to have a guest review as well from Rick Horton, who was doing the show last week. He's been playing Formula One 2010. He's a bit of a petrol head, if truth be known, so he couldn't wait to get hold of that. He's been blasting through it, and he'll give us his review as part of this podcast as well. We're also going to talk about Call of Duty Black Ops, which as we record has just been released. It's breaking all sorts of sales records, and I know Rick, your copy arrived last night.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I'm not going to say too much about it, but I'm more than impressed.
Excellent stuff. Well, what we'll do, we'll sum up some of the reviews that have gone out across the online media, across the newspapers as well, and across some of the podcasts where people have been talking about Call of Duty Black Ops. Strange, though, and we'll just talk about this very quickly, Rick. Review copies didn't exist, were very hard to come by. You could only play this game if you went out and got it on the day that it came out, which makes me slightly suspicious of some of the reviews, because I think, well, have they actually played it all the way through?
Yeah, exactly. I think they may have let one or two out. I think like some of the big games websites might have got a review copy, but everything was certainly embargoed until launch day. And that's usually a bad sign going on some past reviews. But I think, you know, you can't take it at face value, really, especially when Call of Duty's involved. So, you know, we'll come back to this later.
Yeah, people who are listening to this may notice that Rick occasionally is phasing slightly in and slightly out, as if he's sort of going between sort of underwater and above water. This is a technical issue which I have no idea how to solve. So we're just going to
George Bush
roll
isn't
with it.
It.
Yeah, blame
he's
George
waterboarding
Bush.
Waterboarding me.
Yeah,
right now
as we speak. So we're just going to roll with it. We're also going to be talking about the big Christmas sellers as well, and a big bonus for the makers of Fallout New Vegas, which we spoke about in the last podcast as well. That's all to come on episode 20 of A Link to the Cast. Don't forget, you can check out the website, alinktothecast.co.uk. You can email via there, and don't forget to subscribe via iTunes if you're listening via the website. That means every time we appear in an episode, we'll appear direct into your inbox. We're also tweeting on Twitter. You can tweet us via @alinktothecast, and if you go on there as well, @BrianShelf, he's another member of the team, and @RicardoM2. So there's plenty of ways to get in contact with the team. First of all, we always ask a question, which helps us get to know the team a little bit better. Milk. Rick, are you a sniffer or a not? When you open milk, do you sniff it before you pour it?
I wouldn't say, you know, 10 times out of 10 I sniff my milk. I'd like to say that, you know, if I think that it might be going or on the turn, then of course you've got to have a quick sniff. You can't just leave it. You can't take that risk with your cereal, can you? First thing in the morning, everything goes wrong then.
Yeah, I'm definitely a sniffer. I think every time. I know Brian Shelf is
really?
Not a sniffer at all. If there's any question that it's not fresh milk, it will get poured away.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's the way it is. Just
you've got to have a check.
Just thought I'd check because I thought it's an important question to start the podcast
safety
off with.
First, Mick. Safety first.
Absolutely. So, sniffer or not. Let's get on to the headline competition. Here's the story. It's a real story from the world of video games. You have to imagine what would happen if it appeared in the tabloid press, and what would the headline writers make of it. The story of this is that gamers are spending a lot of time on Xbox Live. Microsoft said in a statement on Friday that users spend 1 billion hours on the gaming console each month. So gamers across the world are using 1 billion hours worth of Xbox Live. That's 25 million live users playing about 30 hours monthly each. So pretty much an hour a day on average gamers are using on Xbox Live. So that's a lot of people playing a lot of game online in particular as well. That's the question. If that was to appear in the tabloid press, thinking maybe anything along the lines of being saddle sore, thinking along the lines about having maybe RSI, anything like that, about online friends, about being nerdy and geeky.
Sure.
We'll do the real answer.
We'll work on something.
And we'll do the response at the end of the podcast. Right, let's get on to some news. Okay, so without a doubt, we've got to talk about the biggest video game in the world right now, pretty much, Call of Duty Black Ops, which has been released as we record this just a few days ago. What I thought, Rick, was because there's so many reviews out there and because so many people are talking about this game in really good terms, I thought probably the best way to do it is to sum up what other people are saying. So it's sort of a review of the reviews, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I'm going to start off with a piece from the Guardian tech section. Call of Duty Black Ops quite probably represents the pinnacle of the linear military shooter experience, and you wonder where the subgenre can go from here. Treyarch's game is exhilarating and beautifully orchestrated, but it feels like a full stop. It needs to be a full stop, which is an interesting review from The Guardian. Right. The Telegraph goes like this. Put it simply, Call of Duty Black Ops is superb. The experience of playing the game, thanks to the modified World at War engine, is comparable to the best in what the franchise has had to offer up until now. The meaty kicks of the guns, the blistering pace of the action, and sterling soundtrack of explosions, gunshots, and whistling bullets all serve to quicken the player's pulse, which again is a good one. Xbox official magazine goes with, Black Ops could have easily cracked under the enormous pressure to deliver given the unusual circumstances, but deliver is exactly what Treyarch have done. When all is said and done, this is the proper Call of Duty fans have been waiting for. And in Video Gamer Online, Black Ops offers its own thoroughly enjoyable romp through some entertaining set pieces. I've considered myself a Call of Duty fan for many years, and I've held a deep-seated distrust of Treyarch since Call of Duty 3. No longer.
Certainly, I've read a couple of other reviews as well, and if you're looking at the multiplayer, it is absolutely world-class. It's without a doubt the best FPS multiplayer game there is right now. And yeah, and I even throw Modern Warfare 2 into that, which I'm a massive fan of, as you know. I mean, the leveling system that they've introduced in here and the sort of challenges, they've just put a lot of really good tweaks onto it. And they've even thrown in some really, really good local multiplayer options, which are Modern Warfare has been crying out for. The simple ability to play four-player split screen and actually throw some AI bots in there as well. It's just such a simple game mechanic, which loads of FPSs have been doing over the years, but for some reason Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2 haven't been doing. So being able to actually play a proper game with just three other mates where you don't feel lost on the map, or you feel like you don't feel like you're missing out on the action is a massive plus here. One thing I will say though about Treyarch's single player campaign, and IGN's review certainly agreed with this as well, is the fact that it does feel, and the first review you mentioned as well, it does feel incredibly linear and very, very scripted. And by that I mean it's not only just one brilliant set piece after another, but you know exactly what's going to happen before it does, because it's quite obvious. And also it relies on a lot of old-fashioned sort of game design mechanics. World at War did it as well. It had infinite spawn points for enemies, which just feel like a really cheap tool in level design, because you might fight your way halfway through a trench in a battlefield and you feel like you've cleared everything out behind you, and then all of a sudden a whole bunch of them spawn from a point that you can't deal with, can't do anything about, and they're just like five bad guys behind you all of a sudden. You've got no chance. And, you know, that's a really cheap and old-fashioned level design tool, I think. And for some reason, Treyarch seem intent to keep with that kind of mechanic.
Yeah, the problem is you can't have set pieces if you don't have a linear format. You can't have really sandbox games where can do what you want, because actually you've got to be in a certain point at a certain time, which triggers a certain cutscene, which sparks a big battle scene or whatever it is. So I guess you take one and you bring it with the other. A couple of other bits in the news I wanted to mention in the run-up to Christmas: of the estimated 1.8 million new games consoles set to be pocketed this Christmas, 41% will be PlayStation 3s. Now, you don't need me to do the maths there and tell you that actually that will make it the number one console this Christmas. That's because everyone's already got a Wii, presumably.
Surely, absolutely. I mean, you can't really do a whole lot more to make the Wii sell a whole lot more, I think. I mean, Nintendo have unveiled new coloured versions of the Wii, haven't they, in the run-up to Christmas? But really, we're not going to buy a new Wii just because it's red. And like you say, everybody's got one. So really, it comes down to the choice of the Xbox or the PlayStation. And you know, this Christmas is all about the new tech that's going with the console. So it's about Kinect and it's about Move. And it just looks to me like Kinect is suffering from the same problem that the actual PS3 did when that launched. It's just the price point of it.
It's too big, it's too bulky, it's too complicated. And, you know, you look at it, Wii consoles, and I mentioned 41% will be PlayStation 3. We will be 36%. Now, that doesn't leave a large market for Microsoft. No. And they're trying to shift Kinect, but the price point of it, £129 or bundled as part of a wider package, you're asking people to spend a lot of money for actually, if they've already got a Wii, they've already got motion control to a certain extent. Yeah. Or if you're asking them to buy, or they've already got a PlayStation 3, Move is, you can get into that for upwards of, you know, £35 to £50 sort of thing. So actually, value for money, and people are looking for that this Christmas, recession, etc., and all that sort of stuff. I just wonder whether or not Microsoft and Kinect will not quite be the big break that they're going for.
Yeah, they've anticipated, 5 million sales of Kinect, and I think that's maybe a little ambitious just on the price point. But you know what? We'll see. We'll see come January just what this Christmas was about. I still think that for the price that you're paying for Kinect, you don't get the game experience that you kind of want for that.
Yeah, and don't forget, it's a peripheral as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a new console. It's a peripheral which comes with a series of games. And yes, there will be more games that come with it. But at the end of the day, you're buying a sort of an add-on, if you like, to the 360.
Something you probably won't use with most of the games you play on that console.
Bethesda make Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas. We reviewed it last time round. More of the same, probably fair to say, in terms of the review from Brian Shelf last time out. In terms of New Vegas, I played it myself. You know, as Brian mentioned while I was playing, he went, yeah, you see now it's a bit of a slow burner. He reckons 7 or 8 hours to actually get into it. I noticed, though, check this out, for hardcore gamers going out and spending money, $300 million raised in retail sales alone since the launch of Fallout New Vegas. Now, that is impressive. That's what, in 6 weeks?
Exactly. That is one hell of a figure. And like you're saying about, you know, New Vegas, it's kind of got somewhat mixed reviews. It's a slow burner, people have been saying. Well, there's obviously a thirst, a hunger for that open world game. And, you know, it is basically Fallout 3 with a new skin. It's the same game engine running everything underneath it. So from Bethesda's point of view, that is one hell of a money-making pig that they've done. It's an amazing piece of business, if nothing else.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there's not been a great deal of publicity for New Vegas. Quite a few TV adverts, but you know, if you look at, for instance, Medal of Honor did a big push late on to actually get a lot of publicity out there. New Vegas maybe hasn't done as much, and it's come away 300. It's paid for itself straight away. Yeah,
quite clearly. And then talking about who's winning, like the TV branding for video games, it's got to be Red Dead Redemption right now. I can't seem to watch a TV program without seeing an advert for that DLC zombie pack, which is amazing.
Yeah, but the thing is, and we talked about that in the last podcast, the thing is I can't avoid the rednaps. And my brain has almost switched off the fact that they're actually advertising a Nintendo console, particularly when they're advertising New Super Mario Brothers, a game which we were reviewing exactly a year ago in a pre-run-up to Christmas 2009. We're looking at Christmas 2010, and already, you know, they're still trying to push the same lines, which is part of a wider debate about the end of Wii.
Hi, this is Charles Martinet, the voice of Mario, and you're listening to A Link to the Cast. Woohoo!
Okay, so we've got plenty of reviews on the way. GoldenEye 007 on Wii, Dead Rising 2, Castlevania on PlayStation 3, Formula 1 2010 across a number of different consoles, and Brian Shelf's Flaming Pinball game that he's been banging on about, so we're going to let him review it as part of this podcast as well. First of all, though, Rick, I want to talk about a game which, it's been out for a while now, but in the run-up to Christmas, plenty of games to talk about. Dead Rising 2.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been a while back since I was last talking about this, but this was a big game for me. I mean, Dead Rising, the first one, was a launch title for the Xbox, and while it showed a whole lot of ambition throwing you into a middle of a huge shopping mall with a mass infestation, an outbreak of zombies, it maybe didn't quite live up to its promise. It was a little bit clunky, very, very difficult to play. And I know that Brian was talking about Dead Rising 2. He'd played the demo, and he was thinking that nothing had been fixed. Mm-hmm. It did feel exactly the same way. And you know what? The problem, I think, with Dead Rising, and the same problem with Dead Rising 2, it's not the game, it's the gamer playing it. Because to be honest, the game is set up in such a way as it doesn't help you at the beginning, but it expects you to see it out to the end. So what you do is, in Dead Rising 2, once again, you're one lone man. You're stuck in the middle of a zombie outbreak. This time it's in a huge city, kind of along the lines of Las Vegas. There's a whole bunch of casinos there and shops and things, which you can, you know, use any item to beat up the zombies again. But the problem right at the beginning, and for the first few hours, is your character is so underpowered. It is really you fighting thousands of zombies and kind of not having a chance. And that's an incredibly unfriendly situation for a game to put you in, but it expects you to finish it. And once you've finished it once, it's got the usual game dynamic where it allows you to go back and play it again with all the skills you've unlocked. And that's when Dead Rising 2 really comes into its own. It's once you've got a little bit of skills together, once you know the layout of the city that you're in, once you know where a couple of weapons are that, you know, you can take down a few more zombies with, once you know where some of the survivors are so you can help them, get them back to the safe house, or even equip them with shotguns and then form a little posse going around. And that's really when this game becomes so much better than anything I'd even expected, to be quite honest. The game, story-wise, you know, it's a bit cliched. There's a mass zombie outbreak. You're there. You've got your daughter. She's been bitten by a zombie already.
Yeah, mate, you're doing storylines in a zombie game. We all know. We know what the story is.
Yeah, I know. Well, essentially, the big hook on it is it's on an actual continually progressing timeline. You've got 72 hours until the military come in. But your daughter needs an injection, a jab, once every 24 hours, between the 23rd and 24th hour since the last one, in order to keep her alive and stop her turning from a zombie. So you're constantly checking your watch. You've got to run around. You've got to save people. You've got to find these drugs because you haven't got them. You've got to find out where they are in the city. Make sure your daughter doesn't turn. And then you find out that you've been framed for the zombie outbreak as well. So you've got to clear your name. You've got to find the journalist. You know, it's all happening. And, you know, it provides you with some really good choices as you're playing the game. Do you keep searching, maybe never find the drug that you need when you've only got 5 hours to save your daughter? Or do you go after that journalist knowing that she's got some video evidence that's going to clear your name so you may get out of the city alive? Of course, you may get that evidence and then get killed later on anyway, so it'll all be in vain. So there's a lot of real pressure in the game, and it really deals with it very well. It's something that I wasn't quite expecting quite so much. But the game obviously is about killing zombies. And, you know, what they've done in this time, it allows you to combine items to make even bigger and cooler weapons. So you can find like a wheelchair with a car battery. You strap it up and you've basically got a mobile electric chair. You can just run through hundreds of zombies, electrocuting the lot of them. Or you can get like a little motorbike and put a minigun on the front and just, you know, again, ride through it, drilling everyone down. It's, you know, there's a lot of creativity and ridiculous weapons. You can get power drills and a bucket, and you just put these power drills through a bucket, whack the bucket on a zombie's head. It's gory, it's horrible, it's brilliant. It's a crazy, ridiculous, silly game.
It sounds it's more about what you get out of it more than maybe what it gives you. I don't know.
Oh, man. You see, this is it. Yeah, right at the beginning, it doesn't give you anything. It's just incredibly punishing. But if you survive that, or if you at least try and fight your way to the end, doesn't matter if you don't clear your name and you get killed in the end, you can start again and you can try it all again and clear your name properly or save your daughter. And it's all about trying to find those extra endings and get more cool weapons to take down the hundreds of zombies and just generally have a lot of fun. There's a couple of problems with it. Again, it's a little bit clunky in controls. When you first come up against a boss the first time round, you just want to stop playing the game instantly because you just don't stand a chance against some of the psychos, the humans that have survived and gone a little bit crazy because they've seen these hundreds of zombies running around. But if you do it, it really is an incredibly rewarding game experience for you. So I can't recommend it enough if you're prepared to sit through the pain.
Yeah. What would make you stop playing Dead Rising 2? Pain, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. The first time through is just painful. You come up against a boss, and you think you should be able to take him down. The honest to God truth is, you're not meant to. I spent like four hours.
Oh, you're saying? I think you're spoiling. I think these sound like spoilers.
Well, I don't know about it. You come across these psychos, you see, and you don't have to kill them. They're kind of boss characters, but you know, you've got multiple missions on. You've basically got somebody who tells you where people are holed up. They're watching the security cameras and you've got to try and free them. But then you might have some guys trapping them there because they've gone a bit crazy. And to be honest, I spent, like I say, about 4 or 5 in-game hours trying to kill this one guy. I must have got through about 7 guns, but my character just wasn't good enough at using the guns to make each shot count. So, you know, I failed a whole bunch of other missions, but I stuck with it. I got through it. And it And once I got a few more skills, I could take them down. I could form a posse, and it got a lot better. So, yeah,
which,
the pain.
Which version were you playing on?
I was actually playing on the Xbox.
The Xbox version of it.
Which, if you've got it, you can download a little episode before the game, Case Zero, which looks quite cool. The military are already in there, and you can nick all their military weaponry and just go around and kick ass.
Sure thing. Dead Rising 2 on Xbox 360, recommended by Rick. The demos are out there, actually, via the Live Arcade as well, so do check them out online, maybe before purchasing, then you'll know whether or not it's the game for you. Right, I'm going to do a review now of GoldenEye 007, which is probably one of the most sort of semi-anticipated games of the year, certainly, just because people are so unsure about what it was all going to be about. I mean, people didn't really want to see a remake of GoldenEye from the N64, a game which swallowed evenings, summers, winters, you name it, for years of people's lives, mid-90s. It was one of the great games, and if you're around and a sort of a growing gamer at that time, maybe sort of 15, 16 years of age as I was, it was an ultimate game. I can remember the first time I played it, and I just was absolutely blown away. If you look back at it now, it's basic. It's very basic. It's quite hard to control. There's glitches, there's problems. But I think people will look back with such nostalgic eyes to GoldenEye that actually this had a tough job to do. And guess what? It comes out fighting on all corners. First of all, what I'm going to say is this is not a remake. This is what I would call either a reboot or a reimagining of GoldenEye. Imagine the Pierce Brosnan film. Imagine if they scrapped that, shifted it forward 15 years into the future and put Daniel Craig in. First of all, it's Daniel Craig doing it. We've got Nicole Scherzinger from the Pussycat Dolls singing the theme instead of Tina Turner. We've got Dame Judi Dench is in there playing her role as M as well. And great cast. There isn't the original cast. So Sean Bean is not Alec Trevelyan. The cast members are not the same. Although from a character's point of view, the characters are all there. You'll recognise the characters, you won't recognise their faces, and they'll come across you in different ways. But it's a reboot rather than a reimagining. Presentation-wise, the setup, it was quite basic in the format of the N64. It was essentially a series of folders. That's changed now. It's now very modern. There's lots of sort of graphical twists, very much like the modern Bond films as you see them when Bond gets a briefing. You get that sort of thing. Graphically as well, this is probably the best thing on Wii in terms of a first-person shooter. I was a big fan of Dead Space Extraction. I thought that was a really good title. Graphically, I thought that was excellent as well. They've used the same sort of mechanic to that, the same sort of engine. So as you look at it, cutscenes flow instantly out of your regular scene sort of thing. You know, the characters are all the same. There's no sort of fancy cutscenes in that respect. But graphically, it looks really good. There are some moments where the firefighting gets really intense, really hard, and guess what? You get some slowdown. You get a little bit of lag. But guess what? You got that on the original GoldenEye on the N64, particularly when there was a lot of smoke in the room. So I'm going to say that actually is them being nostalgic and leaning back to the good old days, possibly. Or maybe it's just that the Wii is not quite powerful enough. First and foremost as well, this is a James Bond film. You feel like you're playing the character of James Bond, which was the best thing about GoldenEye. Forget your regular first-person shooters and your Space Marine, this and that and the other. You feel like you're James Bond. You go around, you have the music, you have moments like if you take out a room of people and you've got, say, six or seven people, you're not sure if there's anyone else in the room. When you shoot down the seventh person, you get a, you know, just a little hint in the music that that's the end of that little episode. So you're playing Bond. It feels like a Bond game. It feels like a modern Bond game as well. Weapons-wise, you've got your regulars, you've got your PPKs, your AK-47s, and a wealth of others. Your snipers are in there as well. It's probably not the depth and the breadth of other first-person shooter weaponries, but actually, it's what you need for a Bond game. It's what you expect from a Bond game as well. I want to talk about the controls too, because controls, people say the N64 was perfectly designed for GoldenEye. Guess what? The Wii and the Wiimote together work well. The first-person shooter, it works better than any other first-person shooter I've played on Wii. It certainly works better than Red Steel. It 100% works better than The Conduit as well, which was a massively disappointing first-person shooter. You can use other controllers as well. So if you want to use maybe a classic controller, there's a special edition gold classic controller, golden gun style actually, that you can use. But actually, the Wiimote and the Nunchuk work really well. In terms of your movability, in terms of your targeting around the screen, it's good. Difficulty levels, you've got your regular GoldenEye difficulty levels, you've got your operative, you've got your agent, your 00 agent, and so on and so forth as well, so you can pretty much use it as you see fit. What I want to talk about as well is the modernization of the game. Valentin Zukovsky, Robbie Coltrane in the original one, he is no longer a sort of seedy Russian mafia don who is running a nightclub in the Ukraine or wherever it was in the first game. He's now running a nightclub, a proper nightclub, in Barcelona. And he's a different character. He's a modern nightclub owner, as you would expect a nightclub owner to be now, rather than a seedy social club owner from the mid-90s. So you, well, there's a level in his nightclub where it's dance music, there's people dancing all over the place, and you go and have a meeting with him, and then all hell breaks loose. There's some really, really good moments in there. There's a big set piece where you go into a certain room. The music sort of comes up, the levels come right up in terms of the music, and it's quite peaceful music, and the level of the action just drops down, so you almost enter like a, it's almost like a dream state. It almost focuses the mind. There's some really, really clever touches, and throughout the game there's loads of bits where you think, oh, that's cool. That, for instance, you're stood behind a concrete boulder and you're getting shot at, you're taking cover. Guess what? The concrete boulder, 1, 2, 3 shots. It's down to its sort of, you know, its steel bearings and things like that. You've got to find somewhere else to go. There's loads
That's
of little
impressive
moments
for the Wii.
Yeah, there's loads of moments in that where you just think, oh, I didn't think they could do that on Wii.
Yeah, or, exactly.
Why has nobody done this on the Wii before? And there's so many moments. The way the music and the gameplay fits together works perfectly.
Nice.
From an experience, like I say, the best thing about GoldenEye was it was controllable, it was satisfying, and you felt like you were James Bond. For me, from a first-person point of view, GoldenEye 007 does exactly the same thing, and I do not think people will be disappointed. They will be disappointed if they think, genuinely, if they play GoldenEye on the N64 now, it would still be brilliant, and they want to play the same game. It's not that. It's a great game. It's a good game. It's the best FPS by an absolute mile on Wii, and that's just the single-player mode. I'm going to come into the multiplayer mode next time round.
But what would make you stop playing that single player then? Or do we have to wait until next week?
Well,
next time.
Well, there's a hit there in terms of what's coming up next. But I've also got to mention, and I mentioned this in the podcast last time round, I was playing Sonic 4, people will remember, on WiiWare, and it sort of got me sort of thinking, oh, is this as good as it could have been? And I moved on, played again New Super Mario Brothers on the Wii. I started a new co-op game with the missus, and that's a good game. That is a good game. That is a really good game. So actually, in terms of GoldenEye single player versus multiplayer, there's been a couple of like issues there about which one to pick up and play. And then New Super Mario Brothers Wii is still a really good game. I don't know. Maybe I've been watching too many Jamie Redknapp adverts, I think, maybe. So that would possibly be the thing that will make me stop playing. But GoldenEye 007, Wii fans, you won't be disappointed. James Bond fans, you won't be disappointed. And more importantly, GoldenEye N64 fans or appreciators, I don't think you'll be disappointed either. For me, on the Wii, it's the best FPS there is. Okay, so it is a link to the cast. Loads of reviews coming up on the podcast. We've had a few already. We're going to get a few more now. Rick Horton is here. Rick, old Rick or new Rick? Well, I can't remember where we got up to.
Less of the old, if you don't mind.
Yeah, he's new in some respects, but he's old in many more respects.
And, wise, I think. Wise is the word I go for, wise.
Yes. There are many four-letter words you've been referred to in the past. You're here to review for us this time around. F1 2010, we're at the end of the Formula One season, which was probably one of the best jet. But the game on PlayStation 3 you've been playing, how is it?
Yeah, well, we've had to wait a long time for this. If you remember, when the PS3 was released, it came with only about 6 or 7 titles that were available on release day. And one of them was Formula One Championship Edition, which was made by Studio Liverpool in Liverpool. Which was not a bad game. It was okay. Multiplayer was terrible. And the problem I had with it, as a massive Formula One fan and former Formula One commentator, I'll have you know, to 22 million people on the 10 Sports Network across Asia.
We know it well.
Yes. So the first one, Championship Edition, a little disappointing because it was realistic in many ways, but not in others. And I always felt as though it could have had more in for the avid F1 fan. So when Formula One 2010 was announced, and it was announced ages ago, and it's like they've spent 3 years working on this. It's been developed by Codemasters, the people who brought us The Grid, which is a great simulation racing game. I don't know if you've played that. And the interface, actually, the menus and everything, very similar to grid racing on F1 2010. And the thing that strikes you at first, beautifully rendered cars, pit crews, tracks, scenery, everything, very, very good. But once again, the thing that sadly lacked for me was a slight lack of realism. They spent ages developing a very unique weather system for it, which is meant to change weather dynamics 300 times during, or 300 calculations during any one race. But having played it for about a month now, I've realised that no matter how long the Grand Prix duration you put into the settings, the weather very rarely changes, which seems a bit of a waste, because to make it more exciting, it would be great to have to stop and change to wet tyres and that sort of stuff. So that was something that I felt let it down just a little bit. And also, so many safety cars in Formula One these days, so why not recreate that on the game? So if you're playing a full-length Grand Prix, which can be a bit mundane, let's face it, it would be great to have, you know, the safety cars and weather dynamics a little bit better than they really are. And the other thing that lets this game down slightly, I think, is the AI. It's just not as good as it could be. The other drivers very rarely make mistakes when you're playing against the computer drivers. Very rarely make mistakes. If you try and overtake someone, you know automatically which way they're going to go. So it doesn't make it as difficult as it could do for the real F1 enthusiast. Having said that, though, there are some options on it which make it quite good. There's the career mode. You can go into play individual Grand Prix.
Now, you've got to tell us about the option to do the post-match press conferences where you get to select the option of what you said after the race.
Yeah, we've seen this sort of feature on a few games. Very mundane, really.
Does it impact anything? I guess it doesn't, does it, in terms of...
Well, it can
your,
do
when your ability you're on the track.
No, when you're in career mode, and you start off racing for one of the lesser teams in the first season, and the idea is that you build up and win the championship, and then go to a bigger and better team after that. And I think the questions that you answer in the press conferences after races influence how well you're seen by other teams that might be interested in you. But the choices that you get, sort of a multiple choice of three, really are fairly obvious.
Yes, no, maybe.
That sort of thing. Also, you'll get the team have struggled this season. How do you see their progress? And if you put, well, they're terrible as one of your options, obviously, then you'll get a lower team rating. And if you put they're doing the best they can, then you'll get a good team rating. It is fairly obvious.
Yeah, the old kudos points, I think they're classed as now. I just think the options, it would be great to have, he crashed into me, I crashed into him, or did you see that crash?
Yeah, exactly. And it really doesn't, I mean, apart from when you win the race, they talk in the press conference afterwards about, you know, was it a great win? But they really can't simulate what actually happened in the race, like a crash or an incident or something like that, which is a bit disappointing. One thing that is good in this game, though, is the multiplayer. Strangely addictive. Multiplayers in racing games are often very, very disappointing simply because you get sort of 12 players online, and if they crash on the first turn, they just disconnect.
Yeah, yeah.
And you end up with just one or two people at the end of each race. What they've done here is they've given you the option to either make it realistic, so if you crash, then you effectively wreck your car, you're out. Or you can have it set so that you don't crash. You can also have it set so that you only have visible car damage and nothing that's going to give you a terminal failure. And there's several modes in multiplayer now on this version of the F1 game, which means that you can set it up so that you have a full Grand Prix weekend, so not necessarily a full distance race, which would take 2 hours. And let's face it, who would be around
by the end
of that?
That would be hardcore.
Yeah. You can have that setting if you want, but I don't think anyone would actually join it. But you have the situation where you can have a practice session followed by a qualifying session to figure out people's position on the starting grid, and then the race, which makes it good and it makes it realistic. And that, I think, is the best feature of the game as a whole. We're used to good graphics now, and we're used to Codemasters, and we're used to knowing what they can do with racing simulations. So if you're an F1 fan, it's a definite must for your collection. If you're a racing fan, I would definitely have a look. If you're not, I would hire first before I bought it.
What if you're a car games fan?
Yeah, I think most people have a basic understanding of Formula One, and they know the teams and they know most of the drivers because, let's face it, they're famous people. And I think it's a good racing game in that respect. The settings on beginner are very easy, and you get bored of that quite easily. Some of the assists that you can have, braking and steering assists, sort of take away the realism of it. But if you prefer your racing in a sort of arcade mode,
yeah,
then that's probably the setting for you. The one thing, the setting that I have is a little description on the track itself of which sort of racing line you should take. And the good thing about that is it tells you when to brake as well. So if you've got the automatic braking off, you still manually brake, but at least you know when to do it.
Essentially, you're wearing stabilisers. And I guess the other thing is, if you're a big Formula One fan, if you like Nicole Scherzinger, who's at every single race, it seems, these days, if you like her, she sings the theme to GoldenEye, which we've also reviewed as part of this podcast.
Does she really?
You can get your Pussycat Dolls fixed that way instead.
Fantastic, fantastic.
What would make you stop playing F1 2010?
Well, it's reality, really, Call of Duty. I'll tell you what makes me stop playing F1 2010. Watching the real thing on the TV.
Well, there you go. You've got 6 months off then now.
Yeah.
Plenty of time to get into it.
I guess so. And one of the good things about the game when it first came out is the new Korean track, for instance, hadn't been seen by anyone, but you could play it before the actual real-life teams got there, which was good. And I think as a fan, what I tend to do with these games is if it's going to be, let's say it's going to be the Silverstone British Grand Prix weekend, then a week before, I'll play it on the game, you know, to get to know it. And I think that's a good thing.
We're going to crack on because we've got another review to come from Old Rick, who's actually younger, on Castlevania on PlayStation 3. And then Brian Shelf will be here with this pinball review. Yes, we're all looking forward to it. But Rick, Castlevania, one of these games when the details were first announced, when the trailers came out, it looked absolutely incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's quite a departure because it's a traditional, old-fashioned franchise. It's very much like the Metroid side-scrolling platformer with a combat edge to it. And of course, bringing it into the new generation, they've opened it up and it's full 3D and it's, you know, double jumping wizardry with absolutely beautiful graphics. I mean, some of those videos they released of it, just absolutely jaw-dropping. And, you know, when you get to play it absolutely delivers on that. It's a traditional kind of slasher in the kind of God of War mold, I suppose, but it's got that depth of combat. And I swear, I think for the first 5 or 6 hours, you're just sort of collecting new abilities. And loads of little collectibles. There's like jewels to make your health longer, which is usual, jewels to make your light magic even more efficient or get more of it, and same for the dark magic. There's stuff to increase your strength, and there's just general kind of souls, which I've got to admit I kind of looked at a bit sideways because the whole soul collecting is very much more of a Devil May Cry thing than a Castlevania thing, I thought. But you know, it deals with it very well, and it, like I said, it's absolutely beautiful. If you're looking at it to be a traditional Castlevania game, then it ain't that, really. I mean, a lot of Castlevania is renowned for, you know, scaling up into the top tiers of castles where there's like a big vampire lord in the top or a head of the Lycans, etc. And it's got those typical Castlevania enemies in there, the Lycans, the werewolves, the vampires and necromancers. They're all in there. And again, the big lords of them are all in there too. But, you know, it's a very much more open and outdoor world environments that you're playing in. And I think that's because basically what with the hardware today, you know, you can make it look so much more detailed. You can have rolling hills so you can see the final castles that you're working towards just appearing over the horizon, and it absolutely looks stunning throughout. In terms of the gameplay, like I say, it's a slasher thing, but it's got its own feel to it. You know, when you get a new power, it's very much kind of gothic power. Your main weapon's a cross chain rather than chain swords or anything like that, and it does play on that. You've got a little stake that comes out the bottom, which is particularly cool when you're taking out the vampires and things. But you know, it is a little bit generic. For much of the game, the combat is incredibly generic. You've got vertical slashes and horizontal slashes, so you know, you got your basic crowd control and damage moves right there. You've got a magic button, so you know, it's all very samey. But the thing that Castlevania does incredibly well on these next gen consoles is it makes the things that should stand out really stand out. The boss battles are brilliant. There's no two ways about it. It's got a massive influence from the likes of Shadow of the Colossus. Yeah. There are huge titans in there. You're scaling, you're hammering the weak points. Just really good traditional kind of boss battles. And plus it's thrown a kind of clockwork puzzle elements into it as well. So like you've got to save your wife from being cut in two by a big scythe, but you're only allowed so many moves to do it, and each move brings the scythe lower and lower down. It's just very cool puzzles, which, you know, you actually genuinely have to think about and do feel a great sense of reward when you complete. So at the end of the game, you've got there, you've fought down loads of bosses, but this is where it saves the best thing. And really, any Castlevania fan has to play this game just for the last 5 minutes alone. Because while much of the combat may be incredibly generic, while much of the level design may not really reflect traditional Castlevania, it's the last 5 minutes that really give you a sense of what Konami and Kojima Studios really want to do going forward with the Castlevania franchise. I don't want to spoil it too much, but there are two huge twists, both in terms of plot and in terms of where they're going to take the game in terms of action as well, which just made me so excited for what is going to happen in the future.
Rick, I think you're saying too much. My appetite is wet. Yeah. You have whetted our appetite there, Castlevania. Oh, play through it for what, five, six, 7 hours, and then last 5 minutes. That's the one you've got to stick to.
Yeah, man. And unfortunately, it's a catch-22 with that because you know the next question that we always ask is what makes you stop playing, yes. And it's those last 5 minutes. It's clocking it and realizing that everything you've done, as fun as it kind of was, as generic as some of the action was, and brilliant as the boss battles were, you want to play the sequel right now. Just because what it looks like it's going to be is so awesome and so different to what you've normally experienced. That's what you want to get stuck into.
Love that. What will make you stop playing? Anticipation of a sequel.
Yeah,
that's great.
Absolutely. I don't want to play this one anymore.
Castlevania exactly on PlayStation 3. It's out and it looks absolutely incredible. Right, that's the end of the real reviews. And now we're going to do a bit of a daft one with Brian Shelf.
Pinball FX2 on the Xbox 360, which is slightly deceptive because it looks like it's free and then you download it and you realise that's only all the trial tables. But then the tables are only like 200 points each or something like that, which is like about £1.50. And so I've ended up buying shed loads of them. Review-wise, it's pinball on your Xbox. It's just flappers, banging a ball around with flappers. Really good Earth Defense, probably the best table. And play weird online games on Xbox Live where it's just first to get 1,000,000 points or whatever. Really, really good. Probably eating into my time almost as much as Super Meat Boy. It's great.
Okay, Rick, so there you go. You can head down your arcade now and play real pinball, I guess.
Wow.
Or just stick it on demo mode and why waste all your money on all that?
But, yeah
Brian Shelf, big fan of that, and it's eating a lot of his time as well.
Do you reckon they're going to patch it for Kinect? You can move the table with your hands or anything like that.
Yes, they probably will, actually. That would probably be the sort of... You just stood there pretending to be at a pinball machine.
Pushing the buttons. Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's move on because we have got the headline competition. We're going to wrap it up now. 1 billion hours a month people spend on Xbox Live. There are 30 hours a month being played by 25 million Xbox Live users. So 25 million Xbox Live users on average are online for an hour a day every single month. That works out at 1 billion hours a month. It's a lot of online gaming. But if that story was to appear in the tabloid press, what would the headline be? Rick, what have you got for us?
I've just got I'll say it now. The kids are online. It's not the kids are all right. They're all online. They're all playing games these days.
The kids are online. I like that. See, I couldn't think of any really decent ones for this, which is why I've gone for... the papers would also always signify Bill Gates has been linked to Microsoft. Fair enough. So rather than billion dollar man, I've gone Bill Gates billion hour man.
Right, okay. Fair enough.
Which is probably the kids are online is a much better one. So, Rick, I'm going to give you that one.
I think that might be my first ever win.
Yeah, but there's no Brian, is there? So
yeah, exactly. Actually, it doesn't count.
It's a shallow victory.
Yeah.
So that was the latest episode of A Link to the Cast, episode 20, believe it or not. The team are going to be back very soon, so our thanks to Rick, and to Mick. Don't forget, Brian Shelf will be back as well, although we did manage to sneak in his... stupid pinball review. Anyway, we did that. If you want to go to the website, a link to thecast.co.uk, our competitions are always on there. You can also find a link where you can email us and you can get a link to our Twitter feed as well. Just put at a link to the cast at the start of your tweets, and I'll also be tweeting regularly to at Brian Shelf so you can follow him as well. We'll be back very soon with more reviews in the run up to Christmas.
It's just flappers, banging a ball around with flappers.